You're listening to The Breakfast Show on Faith FM, and this is the second hour of our show where we dig deeper into the Bible. Lawson, before we go any further, what is the fourth quiz question of today's show?
Hey, the fourth quiz question is simply this. The book of Galatians was written to the church of what region? Hey, let us know if you know the answer to that one. 0491-064-669. Again, the book of Galatians was written to the churches of what region?
And I'm glad that it's Galatians. Mm-hmm. Because if it was Galaxians, it would mean that it had been written to people of all galaxies.
Yeah, but this is a little bit more specific.
You know? It's Galatians.
Galatians.
And just a tip, most of the epistles of Paul carry in their name...
Hey, stop.
The adjective stop, that
stop,
relates
stop,
to...
Stop. Stop giving away the answers, man.
Not giving away the answers. So the Philippians was not for a guy called Philip.
It might have been. No, it wasn't. It was from the believers in Philippi. But that's hey, right. Again, 0491-064-669 is the number to text if you know the answer to that one. If you do, go into the draw for our amazing prize for this week, an Andrew's Study Bible that we want to give to you absolutely for free. So again, that number is 0491-064-669, and the draw is going to be drawn tomorrow at 8:45 a.m.
That's right. And Lawson, we have a text message here from Kay.
Oh, yeah.
And they said, hey, thank you so much for debating and chatting about the tough stuff. Sorry, it was not Kate, it was a Belinda.
Belinda. Yeah, I think that was in, about, yeah, what we're talking about. Olympic
the boxing.
Yeah. Which is just such a fascinating scenario. Like, and I guess my takeaway from this is that now this is a certain category of testing, because of, yeah, the, you know, transgender athletes participating in women's sport. And so then they need to set these standards and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And there's people coming at it from all different angles. Like I was reading on Reddit, you know, on like the, there's like a boxing subreddit on Reddit and they're like, oh, these two ladies are just drug cheats and they've been kicked out for that. And people are asserting that they're actually biological males. No, they've just drug cheated. Some people are like, no, maybe they were biologically born with high levels of testosterone, even though they're biologically female. But it, yeah, it's a bit of a hard thing to work out. Hey, it's, you know, some people advocate for, and there's some sporting leagues starting in this idea of like run what you brung, essentially, like this idea of, hey, if you're a man, you're a man, you're a female, you're a female. If you have high testosterone, you have high. If it's low, if you want to do steroids, do them. If you don't want to do it, just everyone, it's just open season. Like everyone just does the best they can. But then at the same time, it's not safe for athletes, I think. And I think that's the big thing about doping that people don't really understand.
The whole idea is that, okay, let us see how far can the human body go.
Yeah.
So this is why they say, hey, no doping. We just want you with you, natural.
But the other side of neutrality is that because a lot of people die from doping. That's the other side. You can get a temporary, like improvement. Which can leave you for the rest of your life either dead or crippled or in some way, like, you know, debilitated. So it's, yeah, definitely doping, in my opinion. I'm like, nah, just leave it at home. But then that means it makes it really strict. And
yeah, man. Look, I mentioned that there was, just on that topic, Lawson, I mentioned that, hey, it needs to be to have some kind of consistency here, I'd say, across the sports. Because in 2018, Caster Semenya, she's a Namibian lady, she was banned from competing after World Athletics ruled that to ensure fair competition, women with high natural testosterone levels must take medication to reduce them to compete in middle distance races.
Which is hard because is that natural, you know?
That is not natural. But say, oh, if you're too much, oh, if it's natural, say natural.
Yeah.
And the apparently, International Olympic Committee say, well, we're looking at their passports. If their passport says they're female, we're taking that as gospel. Yeah. They're female. We're not going to be, you know, demanding DNA exams or anything
that's
like
that. But that's really hard too, because suppressing like your natural. Like, your body works in a certain way. Like, your body has worked out how to work properly. And you might have your body might have a particular defect, whether it's hormonally or a chemical or it's a this or a that. And you need to maybe take medication to live life regularly despite that. But saying, oh, hey, your body actually functions in this certain way and you need to suppress that by taking medication.
Yeah, because then, you know, every time that you're going to do any kind of sports, you know, are we going to come to a point that everybody's going to be asking for blood exams and blood tests and let us check every level of every substance that is in your blood before you're able to run. And if it's above the certain threshold, no, you have to take testosterone suppressors.
Which is hard because it's like, you know, they don't ban people from basketball for being too tall or too short or whatever. It's just, hey, who's the best?
That's right. Yeah. Speaking of which, there has been some very interesting pictures. There's a picture in the Olympics on the basketball that they had the tallest and the smallest basketball players in the same photo. And it looks like David and Goliath.
Yeah, it's probably, I don't know, I'm going to guess right now that the tallest was Victor Wembanyama from France, and the shortest was probably one of the like point guards from Japan.
Yes,
am I correct?
Right. You are correct.
Yeah, that's just the way it is.
And Victor Wembanyama.
Yeah,
he's 2 meters and 22 centimeters,
7'4".
It's really tall.
That's hectic.
And the shortest one is 1.67. 1.67 centimeters. It's,
Kusama or whatever his last name is. Yeah. And these guys are good. Like,
and they snapped that picture, a really incredible, really cool picture about Gabriel Medina.
Oh, yeah?
In surfing. Because you know that surfing is the first time that in the Olympics that surfing is happening so far from the actual capital city. The surfing competition is going on in Tahiti.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's the Olympic surfing is happening in Tahiti.
Yeah. Which is a French territory.
But it's kind of good because we can watch it during the day and not overnight.
That is incredible. And there's no surf in France. Like, that's actually so right. There's like, they're on the Mediterranean Sea. There is nothing. At one point I lived on the Mediterranean Sea in Spain. There is nothing going on there. It's a big lake.
And look at this picture. So I there love is that, a yeah. picture taken by Gabriel Medina.
He's Brazilian.
He's
hey.
Brazilian.
That's why you like it so much.
He almost made a perfect wave. He got the highest score in a wave in Olympic history.
Yeah.
Because when you're going through the waves, you can get graded from 0 to 10, basically. Yeah, yeah. He got a 9.9.
Wow.
And at the end of it, he jumped up. He made a number one sign with his hand. And the photographer called Jérôme Brouillet took a picture of him in midair. It looks like he's floating over the water. It's just like an incredible picture. It's probably going to be the picture of the 2024 Olympics. Yeah. It's really, really cool. So if you haven't checked it out, beloved listener, just Google Gabriel Medina surfing picture or something like that. You will see. This picture is absolutely stunning if you haven't seen it already.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Lawson, enough with Olympics.
Yeah, it's hard to talk. You know, we are Faith FM. We are a Jesus based station here, a faith based station here. But it's hard not to talk about it when it's on because. No,
and speaking of which,
yeah,
since you mentioned that, Gabriel Medina, when he posted on his Instagram his picture, it came with a caption.
Uh huh.
And the caption was a Bible verse. Wow. I can do all things in Christ who strengthens me.
Dude, shout out these Brazilians who are shouting at God.
They're not ashamed of their faith.
Even though they're instructed not to. Like, that's amazing. Really, really powerful. I still can't get over that they're doing the serving in
Tahiti.
Like, it's so funny. Like, they could just ask Portugal, like, hey, could we use your waves? You know, it's just up the road.
I thought so.
You know, but no, the French are truly French. You know, they're doing it the French way in French Polynesia down in Tahiti. Very interesting. Hey, we're going to get into Mark chapter 6, continuing on our Bible study of Jesus doing miracles and healing people and whatnot.
That's right. Correct. So let's look into that.
You're listening to The Breakfast Show. Connect with us on 0491 064 669.
So Mark chapter 6, verses 34 to 52, Lawson. Let's read that story. We're talking about the miracles that Jesus performed around the Sea of Galilee or Lake Galilee. It goes for other names as well. Lake Gennesaret is also another name of that body of water. Let's read what happened here, because this is one story that is replicated across the four Gospels, the multiplication of the loaves and fishes. Let's start reading and see what the Bible has for us.
Okay, starting in verse 30.
34.
The Bible says here in verse 34, "And Jesus, when he came out, saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion for them, because they were like sheep not having a shepherd."
Okay, yeah, let's just pause here. Let's just pause for a second.
Mm-hmm.
We need to say something here.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, when he came out, saw a great multitude and he was moved with compassion.
Mm-hmm.
The word here for compassion is splanchnizomai. Yes. And that word means in Greek basically moved in his inward parts, like he felt bad for them. Why is this important? There is this concept, particularly in the Greek world, that God, because he's perfect, that God, he is above time. By the way, the Bible does not say that God is above time, but this is a topic for another discussion, another time. Just throwing it out there. It's a, there's a concept called the impassibility of God. And this is just a technical term to say God, because the word for passion is not just like burning with passions. Passion is feelings. Say God doesn't feel anything. He's just like a robot.
Yeah.
And the Gospels portray Jesus as being a God that is truly and deeply moved by the human experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I love, in particular, David Asherick's book on this very topic, you know, God in pain. It's more looking at theodicy and looking at the beginning of sin and whatnot. But there is a section of that book that does explain this idea that God is moved with passion. As you said, you know, he's not emotionless and distant. And I think this is a real foundation of the love that we see of God, particularly, you know, displayed out in the great controversy in the battle between good and evil, between Christ and Satan. You know, a lot of God's actions don't come from a place of, you know, out of control passion. But rather because he is moved with love. His responses to certain situations, I believe, are perfectly loving. And we see this happening here, you know, God and the Son of God in the form of human flesh, being Jesus Christ himself, sees the people that he had a hand in creating, people that he had created this world for, struggling, you know, as a sheep without a shepherd. Yeah.
God is not in there. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, friends, beloved listeners, God is not indifferent to your life. He's not indifferent to your joys. He's not indifferent to your sorrows. He's not indifferent to your suffering. God feels, and may I say, he probably feels with way more intensity than we can ever feel.
Mm.
And this emotion that Jesus is feeling here is compassion.
Mm.
He was moved in his inward parts. And why? Because it says that these people were like sheep not having a shepherd. These people were sitting down. They spent the whole day. They took the day off just to hear Jesus. They traveled distances by foot because they wanted to hear the parables and the stories that Jesus had to share.
Yeah.
And that concept here, that expression, sheep not having a shepherd, is used throughout the Old Testament a few times, particularly in the books of Kings and Chronicles. And it is referring to Israel when they had no leadership, they had no king. And Jesus is looking at these, all these people saying, well, they are hungry.
Mm.
And nobody is addressing that spiritual hunger that they have for.
Mm-hmm.
I feel bad for them. Mm. I know, I feel compassion for them.
Yeah.
So let's see what happens next.
Hey, so we continue on in verse 34. It says, "Because they were like a sheep not having a shepherd, so he began to teach them many things." When the day was far spent, his disciples came to him and said, "This is a deserted place, and already the hour is late. Send them away that they may go to the surrounding country and villages and buy themselves bread, for they have nothing to eat." But he answered and said to them, "You give them something to eat." And they said to him, "Shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread to give them something to eat?" But he said to them, "How many loaves do you have? Go and see." And when they found out, they said, "We have 5 loaves and 2 fishes." Then he commanded them to all sit down in groups on the grass. So they sat down in ranks, in hundreds and in fifties. And when he had taken the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven, blessed and broke them, and gave them to the disciples to set before them. And the 2 fish he divided among them all. So they all ate and were filled, and they took up 12 baskets of fragments and of bread fragments and of fish. Now those who had eaten the loaves were about 5,000 men.
Okay. Let's go to verse 45 as well.
Immediately he made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side to Bethsaida, while he sent the multitude away.
Yes, and verse 46. And
okay, continuing.
Yeah.
On, and when he had sent them away, he departed to the mountain to pray.
Okay, let's pause there. Okay. Let's unpack here what's going on, because there's so much here to be unpacked. This story is absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. So Jesus felt compassion to them. He started to teach them many things. And then it started to become late. Mm. It was dark. The disciples found, you know, had a problem here. Say, "Hey, Jesus, we need to let these people go."
Mm-hmm.
So now, otherwise, they won't be able to find anything to eat. Now, let me just say this. Any event, like we're in Australia, here in Newcastle. If you have an event of 5,000 people and you just say, "Okay, let's just let these people go away so that they can eat."
Yeah.
Even in a city like Newcastle, like, which is way bigger than any city in the biblical times.
Mm-hmm.
What is the chances that all of these people will actually find a place to eat, or enough places to eat with enough seating capacity and so on?
Yeah, if we had 5,000 people on Newcastle Beach and we said, go for a walk, find somewhere to eat, like we would flood the place with people.
And this is like 5,000 men. So you...
Plus their families. Yeah.
One wife, plus 2 kids on average. So this, you can multiply probably, this number by 4. 20,000 people.
Yeah. It's huge. Enormous.
It's huge. It was already late. Were they going to be finding businesses opening that late?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So the disciples were just saying, "Hey, we don't want to deal with that. You know, these people are going to start resenting us here."
Yeah.
Let's just like send them away while we have time. Let's just like,
yeah, that's right.
Everyone, man, with their own problems here. Jesus.
If you send a bus of 40 people into McDonald's, you will like tie up the place for an hour. Like we're talking about an innumerable amount of people here that they need to look out for. But yeah, this is such a, I feel for the disciples in this situation, because this is such a logistical nightmare.
It is a logistical nightmare. And the disciples are saying, "Hey, you know, each man with their own problem, let them go, Jesus, because it's going to start, you know, security wise, we're thinking about these things." And then Jesus asks them a question or says something to them. He says, "Hey, why don't you give them something to eat?" Mm. Is that a problem? So the first thing that we have to ask, and Jesus is a very big proponent of personal responsibility.
Yeah, wow.
Mm. You are responsible for everything that goes on around, to the things that affect you. We have a say. And they're just asking them, "Okay, what can you do about this?" Because it could be very easy that they're blaming God. "Oh, it's Jesus' fault." Because Jesus has been the one preaching nonstop here since these people arrived.
Yeah.
They're kind of pointing the finger at Jesus here, saying, "Hey, like, Lord, like this was not really wise. Let us give you some advice here."
Yeah.
And you say, "Okay, you have a situation, difficult situation. So, first thing, why don't you take responsibility?"
Yeah, why don't you solve this problem? Yeah. And I love what you said just now, you know, like blaming Jesus for being Jesus. Like blaming Jesus for...
"God, is your fault that this is happening."
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's okay, so it's a problem. Okay, yeah, I concede there is a problem. People need to eat. So why don't you do something about it? And then they said, "It's impossible! Are we going to give like 200 denarii?"
Yeah.
And to be honest, 200 denarii will not be enough to feed all these people. No. Are we going to get 200 denarii to feed all these people?
Mm.
What did Jesus say? This is coming next.
You're listening to the Breakfast Show podcast on Faith FM. Positively different.
And we are studying the Bible together. We're studying through the Gospel of Mark. We are following the 20 million movement guide, which you can have access to for absolutely free at sabbath.school, Sabbath with double B, or Sabbath School app in your app store of choice. Lawson, before we continue and we go any further, what is the last quiz question of the show?
Okay, the last quiz question is this quiz question, number 5. Jesus said new wine is not to be put into A, new wineskins, B, old wineskins, C, young women, or D, young men. A very interesting question here. Jesus said that new wine is not to be put into A, new wineskins, B, old wineskins, C, young women, or D, young men. If you know the answer to this one, 0491-064-669 is the number to text. If you text the number with the correct answer, you go into the draw for our Andrew's Study Bible, a beautiful, expensive, incredible Bible that has commentaries, quotes, and Bible studies in it as well to enable you to be your own Bible teacher, to be taught the Bible through the Bible, and to teach that to others as well. 0491-064-669 is the number to text if you know the answer. If you do, you will go into the draw to win this Bible. Again, that question was, Jesus said new wine is to not be put into A, new wineskins, B, old wineskins, C, young women, or D, young men.
Very well, Lawson. So the disciples were kind of blaming Jesus without blaming him. They do this all the time, all the time. It's a bit of a theme. They say things that are apparently respectful, but then in the backdrop, the question behind the question, like, Lord, aren't you like, don't you realize that we're going to have a problem here, that you are doing something unwise? And then Jesus turns the table back and he said at them and says, hey, why don't you do something about it? God always asks us these questions. You know, why don't you do something about it? Whenever we're complaining to something about God, the first question that I think God asks, okay, what can you do about it? Okay.
I think that in some sense, this is just a form of good leadership. Just in general.
Absolutely.
Teaching people personal responsibility and accountability. And this is something.
Problem solving.
Dude, I'll say this to listeners out there. If you want, and maybe many of our listeners are employed and have careers and but maybe you are in that position or you're looking for a career, you're looking for something to sink your life into. If you can be teachable and you can aim to be a diligent problem solver, you can get a job in any industry. Oh, of course, with the required training, but you will get and keep a job in any, if you're teachable and if you're
the right attitude,
problem solver, if you have the right attitude, you're good.
Attitude trumps skills any time of the day.
Wow. Yeah.
Attitude, because you can train skills. Attitude, it's very hard to train. If you have a hardened heart, you know, or you have bad attitude, we're praying for you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But so the attitude of the disciples of Jesus is, hey, let's take responsibility. What can we do about them? And then they said, oh, shall we go buy in 200 denarii worth of bread and give them some? Like, just saying, Jesus, do you think that, you know, we are rich? Do you think that we have infinite money here? And then Jesus asks the next question, which is amazing. He says, how many loaves do you have? Go and see. He says, okay, why don't you start with what you have, looking at what you can do with what you have.
Yeah.
And I'm going to share with you something that is quite amazing in the Bible. Is the principle of how miracles happen. Okay. Miracles happen a certain way. And the first thing is, we do what we can with what we have to obey God, to glorify God. And then God does the rest. If it is necessary a miracle so that God's name will be glorified, God may do it, but only after we've done what we can with what we have. God will never do for us what we can do for ourselves.
Wow.
This principle is so, it's all over the Bible. There's they're going to be crossing the Red Sea. God says, walk until your feet is touching the water. And then I'm going to open it to you.
Yeah.
Shamgar was a judge that, you know, defeated, I do not know how many Philistines using an ox goad. Like a little piece of wood, basically. He did what he could with what he had, and God bless from that point forward.
I even think in the moments of really miraculous stuff, you know, for example, like the story of Naaman, for example, like dipping in the Jordan. And it's like, for Naaman, like, you know, he gets told you should go dip in the Jordan. He's like, why would I even do that? And does dipping in the Jordan, like, solve leprosy? And the answer is, like, for 99.999% of people, no. And in this case, like, Naaman's leprosy, like, it's a death sentence in the Old Testament. But, you know, God, the instruction there is do something, like do something and don't complain about the solutions that are out there. Like let's try and just even do something. And obviously God miraculously worked and made up the difference. Yeah. And in all of these cases, God miraculously works and makes up the difference. But yeah, there is this level of personal responsibility, living for excellence and whatnot. And hey, like we do fall short, but that's why God fills in the gap.
That's right. And then it says here, you know, it's like the application, you know, just like saying God says to you, hey, jump as high as you can. Like I do that with my son sometimes as a parable. Say, hey, son, can you reach the ceiling of the house? He can't, of course. Said, jump as high as you can. And when he jumps as high as he can, then I catch him and I lift him up and then he can reach the ceiling. And what I'm trying to teach him is that you do what you can with what you have, with all your might and all your soul, and then God will do the rest for you. Mm. So Jesus says, okay, how many loaves do you have? Well, I don't have any. Well, one other of the principles of living life in the kingdom is seek, ask, and knock. So go and see. Go and check. Before you say, oh, but I can't do this. Well, see if someone can help. Go see what resources are available to you. Be diligent. Do your part. And I will come. And then they go there and they find 5 loaves, 2 fishes. They gave them to, and this is the other principle. They gave that to Jesus. They consecrated that to Jesus. And then Jesus, you know, had them organize the multitudes and he multiplied the loaves and the bread. So there's some amazing principles here. But one thing that I also want to say here in this passage is that the messianic expectations of the time is that the Messiah would come to deliver the Jews, they deliver Israel from their enemies.
Yeah, wow.
And they're realizing, imagine having a military commander that would have an infinite amount of supply for his troops.
Yeah.
If he could feed the 20,000, he could feed a troop of 5,000. There is no siege that could defeat them. There is no desert that could stop them.
Yeah.
But instead, what Jesus says, after all of that, he dismisses the disciples. Say, okay, you go home. He dismisses the crowds by himself. You go home, and Jesus goes up into a solitary place to pray.
Yeah.
Because what Mark is making it very clear here, if Jesus had any aspirations of being a military messiah, political messiah,
or king, or whatever it may be,
he could.
Yeah.
But his work was not. He had the power to. He was walking over the water. We didn't read it, which is in that passage. Mm. The disciples were in the middle of the lake. And they were surprised that Jesus was walking on the water. Jesus has the power over nature. He's the supernatural, you know, man, God, 100% human, 100% God. And yet he did not use his powers whatsoever to go to any worldly gains or advance.
Yeah.
His mission is very simple, is very clear, is to deliver people from the bondage of sin.
Wow.
And the question that I want to throw it out there is this. If so many people had a false understanding of Christ's first coming, and that led to even disaster to some, aka Judas, how much more could a false understanding of the second coming of Jesus also be a disaster for some? This is why here on Faith FM, we are committed in exploring the second coming of Jesus, preparing a people for his return, so that you can know what the Bible says and you can be thoroughly prepared and equipped for every good work, and in particular as we wait for the return of Jesus.
You're listening to the Breakfast Joe podcast on Faith FM, positively different.
Now it's the time, Lawson, that we review the answers to the quiz questions. We also have a question here from one of our beloved listeners, Ellen. Let's see if we can tackle that as well. So let's see if we can do this fairly quickly.
Yeah. Hey, let's get through this. Who was the most wicked kings according to 1 Kings 16? A lot of people answer Manasseh, but in the Bible, it says that Ahab was the most wicked king that there had been. So potentially you could say that Manasseh was among the most wicked of kings, but it explicitly says, and he was a terrible guy, Manasseh, but it explicitly says about Ahab, you know, he was worse than any other king that had come before him.
That's right. I would say the reference here is 1 Kings 21:25. It says, but there was no one like Ahab who sold himself to do wickedness in the sight of the Lord because Jezebel, his wife, stirred him up.
Yeah.
So that's the passage there. Next one, John the Baptist called the Pharisees and Sadducees a generation of what?
Of vipers.
Yes,
the
vipers.
Snake, the snake, not the car.
It's a reference to the book of Isaiah because the idea here is that a snake hatches snake eggs. Vipers that hatches eggs inside of their own bellies. And there's a folklore that vipers would also eat their mother after they are born for nutrition and so on, or from the inside, I'm not too sure. But the thing is that they are a breed of vipers in that they are hatching evil in their hearts. That's the analogy behind it. What crime had Barabbas committed?
Murder.
Murder. Now, let me just say this. The word in Greek for murder in the case of Barabbas, you know, it said, oh, Barabbas is a thief or murder. It's not a typical word for murder. It's a word for a political.
That's right.
Revolted murder.
Yeah, it was political violence because
violence.
He was a zealot.
Yes, and some people say that Barabbas was an aspiring of a Christ figure himself, of a messianic figure himself, but he tried to do this through violence. And this is why the people will say, "Oh, we want that kind of Messiah, not the lowly, humble, long-suffering one. No, we want the one who's actually."
Getting
stuff done, and he's killing the Romans, and so on and so forth, which is very interesting. All right, next one. The book of Galatians was written to churches of what region?
Galatia.
Galatia in modern-day Turkey. Jesus said new wine is not to be put into...
old wineskins.
That's right, because new wine or unfermented grape juice, as we would call it here, when you add it to old wineskins, eventually it would ferment. The fermentation will create gas. And if you're adding it in an old wineskin, which is nothing more, nothing less than the stomach of a goat, usually, that was tied up in both sides. And if it was old, it loses that natural flexibility. And with the added pressure, it bursts. So you lose both. So that's the analogy there. Alan said, hey guys, Jesus said the end will come once the gospel goes to the whole world. Matthew 24, verse 14. Did this already happen in Paul's day after Jesus states above? Colossians chapter 1, verse 23. The hope of the gospel which you heard, which was preached to every creature under heaven, of which I, Paul, became a minister. God bless. Love you lots. Thanks, Alan. This is a great question. Yes and no. So, yes, in one sense, yes. The gospel, in the days of Paul, in one generation, the gospel had went really, really far.
Yeah.
Through the whole of the Roman Empire and through parts of Asia as well. And that was the known world to them.
That's right.
They didn't know that there was the existence of South America, North America,
Australia. Yeah.
The really far lands of the East. So yes, I think that Jesus's prophecy is talking about like every single person in the world will have the opportunity to hear the gospel, to understand the gospel, to make an informed decision about that. However, it's also quite remarkable that in less than one generation, the gospel was preached to a incredible, immense, and difficult geographical area under Paul. This is what Paul is talking about here. But yeah, in Paul's allusion is the then known world to them, particularly the Roman Empire, not the whole world as we understand it today. So yeah, that prophecy is still to be fulfilled. We all have a part to play in that prophecy. And again, it's very interesting that we don't need to convince anyone. God asked us to be witnesses. To tell them about how good God is, what he has done for us, for this world. And then what they're going to be doing with that decision? Well, that's up to them. And for us, we're just supposed to love, to serve, to share, and to witness about Jesus. We have now come to the end of our show, but fear not, beloved listeners, because our amazing faith-filled programming does not stop here at The Breakfast Show. Right after us, we have... what? The Tazzy Encounters, another live show straight for you with amazing, incredible, great biblical content for you to continue your morning and build up your faith. Lawson, do we have any departing gift for today's show to our beloved listeners?
Hey, it's just simply this. I have a book for the kids. This is Discovering the Miracles of Jesus, coloring book by Elizabeth Talbot. So this is actually a fantastic book. This is great if you have a young child that is into coloring or like myself. So I grew up, hated drawing, hated coloring, just loved scribbling though. I just love scribbling all over the page. But hey, it's got, it teaches the stories, while you color as well. We want to give this to anyone who texts in our code word, the first texter through. That code word is miracles. If you're the first texter through with the word miracles, we'll give you that book, Discovering the Miracles of Jesus, coloring book for kids by Elizabeth Talbot. Absolutely for free. Again, that code word was miracles.
All right. Miracles. That's great. My kids would absolutely have loved that book. So I'm pretty sure that your kids will love it too. So Lawson, this is it for today. I was just reading here that, Ayatollah Khomeini from Iran just ordered a strike against Israel. So we're seeing some escalations. Let's see. Tomorrow we may be able to talk a little bit more about this. And in the meantime, do not forget to talk faith, live faith, and act faith, and you will grow strong in the love of God. Bye.
God be with you till we meet again. God be with you till we meet again.
Thanks for being a part of the Faith FM family. Join our community on Facebook or get in touch at 1-800-FAITH-FM.